This week, it's another episode of Austin Titchener talking to his many friends from the ranks of celebrity, the famous, the semi-famous, the infamous, and the not terribly famous. And in that category falls Brian Stack, a writer on the Conan O'Brien Show. Hi, Brian.
Hi, Austin. How you doing? Thanks for having me do this.
Oh, you are so welcome. Among the comedy cognoscenti, it's kind of a well-known fact that, with the possible exception of Pat Finn, you are the nicest man in comedy.
Oh, that's very kind of you to say.
To what do you attribute this?
I guess it's just a desperate need to be liked.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever it is, wherever you are. Thanks for subscribing, streaming, or downloading and listening to us on your computer or MP3 player. I'm Austin Titchener, one third of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, and you're listening to this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast, number 249, writer Brian Stack. Actor, improviser, Second City alum Brian Stack has made his living for the past 14 years writing comedy for talk show host Conan O'Brien. But he got his professional start in Chicago, first at the Annoyance and Improv Olympic Theaters, with an improv group called Jazz Freddy at the Live Bait Theater, and then at Second City, where he wrote and performed in several shows with my wife, Dee Ryan.
In fact, one of the nice memories I have is you calling me after one of your performances there, and you go and I go hello, and you go, hey Austin, it's Brian, and of course everybody does our Brian Stack invitation, so here's mine. You know, hey Austin, it's Brian, how you doing? Oh good. What's up? Oh, nothing much. Dee just broke her leg.
Oh God, that's right. Oh yeah, poor Dee.
It was in the middle of her performance. We taken her down to the emergency room. I think she's gonna be fine, but you know.
Oh my God, I forgot that poor Dee. She recovered pretty quickly, right?
But yeah. If you're going to get that kind of phone call, you want to get it from Brian Stack.
Oh, wow. I can't believe that was like 15 years ago. That just freaks me out. It really has flown by. But I always love working with Dee. She's always fun.
Well, you've gone from being a performer in Second City, and you went from that. Did you go straight from Second City to writing for the Late Show with Conan O'Brien, back as it was then known?
It was about a three-week gap in between.
Wow.
I had decided I loved working at Second City. It was always my dream to work there. But did feel like it was kind of feeling like time to go. I never wanted it. It was one of those jobs that I didn't feel like you could really do if it ever started to feel like a job. And I started to feel like when Neil Flynn left our cast.
Yes.
For me, maybe because we're so close, he and my wife Miriam and I, it almost felt like maybe I should have stepped aside right then. But we started the process on the next show, and I wanted to do it because Mick Napier, the brilliant Mick Napier, who, without whom I never would have started doing improv, he was going to direct the next show. But I was fighting it, fighting the fact that it was just time to go. And then a few weeks later, by luck, some of the guys in New York that knew my work in Chicago asked me to submit a packet of ideas for Late Night with Conan O'Brien, and luckily I didn't expect to get the job, but luckily I did. I was only supposed to be there for 3 months, actually.
Wow.
I was supposed to be filling in for a writer who was out, Tommy Blacha, the hilarious Tommy Blacha, who's another Chicago guy. But then luckily they liked the work I was doing and figured out a way to keep an extra writer on.
Right.
And 14 years later, I'm still with them.
Wow. Well, and I want to talk about, you know, the technique of putting your packet together and applying for a writing job. But go back to how you got into Second City and how you started improv. And I mean, Mick Napier is you know, one of those names that we all know from Chicago. He'd probably be pissed if I said this to him, but he's achieving sort of legendary Del Closeian status as a director, as a nurturer of talent, as a guy who just, as a leader of other comedians.
Absolutely. I think Mick lived on my dorm floor in college, which I still can't believe how random it is that you could end up on a dorm floor with someone that ends up influencing your life so much.
And what college?
At Indiana University.
Okay.
I later went on in the University of Wisconsin-Madison for grad school, which is where I actually performed improv for the first time. But I used to go see Mick's improv group in college. It was Faith Soloway and Joe Bill and Mark Sutton, and it was a terrific group, but I didn't have the guts to audition. And Mick would say, do you want to audition? Please come audition. And I just never had the guts. And I got so mad at myself for that. But he told me about Improv Olympic. And so the summer between college and grad school, I started studying at Improv Olympic.
In Chicago.
Yeah, in Chicago. And, yeah, I honestly believe that Mick and, with all respect to Dell, because without Dell, none of the work would have happened at all.
Right.
In my experience, I think Mick is the most, is the best improv director and teacher that I've ever seen. And in terms of looking at what someone does and figuring out a way to help them and make them better, he can articulate it in a way that, and I'm very inarticulate when it comes to the work, so I appreciate it all the more. When I've tried to coach and teach, I feel like occasionally I'll say something helpful, but
right.
I developed a even greater respect for people like Mick after I tried coaching and teaching, because it's a gift in and of itself, apart from performing. And
so, yeah, he's able to seize on what makes that person unique and special and talented, and rather than trying to force that person into a different hole or a different category.
Yeah, exactly. And he's also one of the most original and entertaining people to be around that I've ever met. I mean, he was, certainly when I was 18, I'd never met anyone remotely like Mick. And I remember he took us all to see Rocky Horror Picture Show. It's the only, first and only time I ever saw it in a theater, and it was probably his 50th time. And he was 19, I was 18. You know, he took us all in his beat-up 280Z, and I'll never forget that. So it's funny how this guy, yeah, he's become this real almost, I think he's actually probably the most respected improv teacher now that Dell's gone. I don't think there's anybody better than Mick.
Well, and he's also just a fantastic director. A shaper of text, a creator of a theatrical event. You know, that one of the best I've ever seen too.
Yeah, and there's if anyone wants to see him in action, there's a documentary called Second to None, which you may have heard of. It's out on DVD and it's fascinating. It's the Second City allowed a documentary crew to follow the development of the show Paradigm Lost from the first day of rehearsal till opening night. And Mick was the director. The cast was amazing. It was Tina Fey, Jim Zulevic, Kevin Dorff, Rachel Dratch, Scott Adsit, and Jenna Jolovitz. And so you see all these people, and you see Mick shaping the show. And if anyone wants to know how a show like that gets put together, I would highly recommend seeing Second to None.
Wow.
And the new version that just came out on DVD has a lot of bonus footage. And it's funny to see Tina with her short hair and her overalls and no makeup, and because she became such a movie star. It's amazing. But she was always pretty, but she really tended to hide her light under a bushel back then.
Right, that's funny. I've never heard about that. That's really cool. I'll look forward to checking that out.
Yeah, it's a great doc. It's for anyone interested, I think, in the Second City process and what it's like to work there. I think it's going to be an invaluable document for years later, just for students, I think, generations from now to see.
Well, so you started improvising at UW-Madison. With Pat Finn, or Pat Finn saw you up there?
You know what's odd is I met Pat through Chris Farley, because Chris Farley had gone to college with Pat, and Chris was in my first improv group in Madison. So they were kind of, Pat was ended up being a mutual friend kind of thing. Chris had gone to Marquette with Pat,
right.
And he came back to Madison, which is his hometown, and he started doing improv after finishing school. And so I got to know Pat through Chris, I took a class between college and grad school with Sharna at Improv Olympic.
Right.
And then did my first performing in Madison with a group called the ARC Theater, ARK. And that was a wonderful experience. It's a laundromat now, unfortunately, but it was a nice little theater. Before I'd been there, Joan Cusack had worked there, and Holly Wartell. They had some really terrific people come through. I wish I'd gotten a chance to work with them. I got to know Holly a little later in Chicago, and she's great, but I never got to work with her, unfortunately.
So now, despite your earlier protest that you are inarticulate about the aspects of comedy, what do you think you learned or took away most from Second City, the experience of being at Second City, writing and performing?
I think just the opportunity to go out every night in front of a crowd and see what works and what doesn't. I'm sure there are
less fail.
Yeah, exactly. I think, and they talk about that a lot in Second to None, the fact that most scenes do fail ultimately. Most ideas you try on stage don't end up in the final show. The freedom to fail is probably the greatest gift you can have. And that's one reason I loved Chicago so much, was the lack of industry presence gave you this feeling of, no one's really no one from the industry is really paying attention, so we can really develop and take chances, and you don't feel like you're going to be judged or scrutinized. And I think directors like Mick create an environment where you can try anything, and like he talks about that in the documentary, like how much he loved working with Kevin Dorff, because Kevin Dorff will try something five times, even if it falls completely on his face, he'll say, yeah, I'll do it, I'll try it. And so yeah, I think the freedom to fail is one of the most crucial things in improv, and it's one of the reasons my auditions for Second City were always so terrible, because I didn't feel like I had freedom to fail at an audition. It's once a year. I always compare it to for me, Second City, because it was a dream of mine, I always looked at it as almost like someone was letting you go in and for 5 minutes with the girl of your dreams, and you have 5 minutes to win them over, and you're just going to be tongue-tied and a wreck. And so,
a wreck or erect?
Oh, a wreck. Yeah, erect. Two. But luckily, they came out and saw some shows and hired a few of us from the group Jazz Freddy, where they ended up hiring my wife Miriam and Dave Koechner and Kevin Dorff and Rachel Dratch and all these people from that group. I certainly didn't get hired for my auditions, that's for sure.
Hello, this is Sister Mary Martha. You may be familiar with me from my blog, Ask Sister Mary Martha, which can be found at asksistermarymartha.blogspot.com. And you are listening to the Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast. And I don't think there's anything filthy today.
Where can you RSC the RSC? We are gearing up for performances of The Complete World of Sports Abridged in Gainesville, Florida, Athens, Georgia, Decatur, Alabama, and then our three-week run of The Complete World of Sports Abridged in New York City at the New Victory Theater in October and November. We'll also be giving two performances of all the great books abridged at Pepperdine University in Malibu and Caltech in Pasadena in October. And then starting November 25th, the day after Thanksgiving, we premiere our eighth stage production of The Ultimate Christmas Show Abridged at the Merrimack Repertory Theater in Lowell, Massachusetts. As always, the very best way to stay up to date about all of our worldwide performance dates is to sign up for the Reduced Reader, our email newsletter. Go to ReducedShakespeare.com and click on the link to subscribe and check out our touring page for specific box office venue and ticket information.
So how do you put together a writing packet for Late Night with Conan O'Brien or any other gig?
Well, you know, it really differs by show. For example, SNL is just you usually submit a series of sketches,
right?
Full sketches that are written. At Late Night, what they tended to ask for was like 12 to 15 ideas in short paragraph form. Like they're not fully fleshed out, but it could be. It was more like premises with. Maybe some examples of dialogue. If, let's say it was a stylized piece, you might want to throw in some examples of how the dialogue might be.
Right.
But it really tended to be almost short descriptions of sketch ideas or things that could happen on the show or character ideas for the show. And but it would differ for the monologue writers. Like, I've never been one of the monologue writers.
Okay.
They would submit just a packet of jokes. We all wrote jokes when he would host the Emmys or something, you know, for the monologue. But I don't do that on a daily basis.
Right. You're a sketch writer, not a joke writer.
Right, exactly.
Okay. And were you able to cannibalize any of the sketches you had written at Second City for this packet?
You know, I ended up doing. There was a character that was cut. We ended up cutting from one of our shows called Bath Time Bob, who is the hygiene cowboy. He would show up in people's and he would sing about personal hygiene. But he also had a very dark undercurrent of alcoholism. And but he was singing this really upbeat. I think one thing running through a lot of my characters is pleasant on the surface, but there's something
autobiographical is what I
exactly. Which one of the reasons I always one reason I think I love the comedy of Andy Daly, I don't know if you know Andy Daly, but his characters are very, I felt a kinship with him when I would see the characters he would do, because he's also a very friendly kind of Midwestern type guy, but a lot of times his characters turn out to be murderers or, but I think we're both tickled by things that would frighten us in real life. In the abstract, in comedy, I'm often drawn to things that horrify me in real life that maybe it's my way of dealing with,
interesting.
Like, you know, just those subject matters.
Hi, I'm Brian Stack, and welcome to Comedy Catharsis.
Exactly.
Yeah, right.
It beats therapy. So what are some of the characters or the sketches that we would recognize from the Conan O'Brien show?
Well, that
you've done.
Some of the characters I've done at Late Night that may or but we've sometimes been able to bring them back, but most of the time I did the interrupter, who is this, again, a character who would interrupt Conan and finish his sentences, but would reveal these horrible things about his own life, that he sleeps in a dumpster behind the Port Authority, and he was divorced many times and just had a horrible upbringing. And then I often did Frankenstein,
right,
which was actually fun because I played him basically like a little kid who just wants to please, you know, and just wants to, he's showing his a quiz he did at school, you know, or something to his parents. And I did the Ghost Crooner was kind of a Bing Crosby type crooner who had again been murdered because he sang kind of in a sweet Bing Crosby type voice, but he was a horrible racist and misogynist. So he'd been killed by the League of Women Voters back in the 30s. Even back then his views would have been unacceptable, so he was murdered even in the 30s. And Hannigan, the traveling salesman, who basically sounded like William Powell, you know, kind of, hey, little girl, is your mother home? You know, that kind of guy who would show up. A lot of my characters are very anachronistic. They have nothing to do with today's life and times.
Say, what's the dope, see?
You know, yeah, exactly. It'd be like, say. It was like...
Love that old 30s slang.
Yeah. It'd be like, you know, hey, you're full of suspense, Hitchcock. You know, it'd be like that kind of thing, you know.
So you started Late Night with Conan O'Brien 14 years ago. Now, famously, you know, the Conan O'Brien took over the Tonight Show and then relinquished the Tonight Show in a great moment of moral indignation, and he had most of the nation behind him. We were all Team Coco. But what was that? How tough was that for you? Because you and your family lived in New York for this long time. You came out here to California to be writers on the new Tonight Show with Conan O'Brien, and suddenly that went away. That must have been really, I mean, not only difficult from a job standpoint, but just difficult from a personal standpoint.
It was pretty crazy and unexpected, but, you know, I have mixed feelings about it because, on the one hand, I really felt for Conan because I know it was always his dream job, and he always wanted the Tonight Show. I mean, I think it's probably, you know, the top of the mountain for people who want to be talk show hosts. But on the other hand, to be honest, I don't really miss the Tonight Show. It never felt like a good fit for me personally. It felt too big. The studio felt too big. The show felt too big. Felt like there was too much scrutiny. I think at Late Night I'd gotten very spoiled by the fact that it was almost like we were up in an attic screwing around and nobody was paying attention.
Right. Under the radar, and it didn't matter.
Yeah, you could kind of try anything you wanted. And so when we got to the Tonight Show, some of this was self-imposed, I must say. But I think there tended to be... occasionally you'd be like, well, we can't really do something like this at the Tonight Show and stuff like that. Or
you got into a situation where you're kind of censoring yourselves a little bit.
Yeah, or you started to feel like there was less of the kind of stuff that we love doing most at Late Night, like where characters would come in or really silly stuff could happen. And it started to feel a little almost inappropriate at the Tonight Show. And so I don't miss it at all. I miss our budget. We had a great budget. but the TBS people have been great. The executives are really, really down to earth and nice people to deal with. Working on the Warner's lot is great, especially for a movie nerd like me to be walking around the Warner's lot and just seeing, oh, my God, they made Casablanca here and The Maltese Falcon, my all-time favorite movie. And you know, it's real. So, other than the budget being smaller and the fact that we couldn't bring everyone over from the other show for that reason, unfortunately, I think it's been a very positive change for me personally. Anyway,
and now you've sort of come full circle. You're back in a situation now with the Conan. Is it called Conan? It's called Conan.
On
TBS. Turner Broadcasting. It seems like you've kind of come full circle. You're now back in a place doing the Conan show on TBS where it's okay to fail.
Yeah, it does feel looser, more experimental. I don't know if it'll ever be quite as loose and experimental as Late Night was, but we've certainly done a lot of things that feel like they could have been done at Late Night. We did a few things at the Tonight Show like that, but we've done a lot more of the kind of stuff I love at the new show. With the Tonight Show, for the first time, we started to hear about numbers and demographics and stuff. And at Late Night, we were in the good position, at least I felt very blessed and lucky, to come in where Conan was number one in his time slot. We didn't have a ton of viewers, but we never heard about numbers or anything. You get to the Tonight Show, and suddenly you're up against Letterman, and you're just... And it's, well, it's down from what Leno got. For the first time, we had to worry about that, and that was, we'd been very spoiled in New York, you know.
Well, and you famously stuck with this gig. I talked to John Glazer, who didn't stick with his job writing for Conan and went off in his other direction. Do you have any other projects you're working on, novels, plays, TV shows, pilots, movies?
I've kicked around a lot of ideas. I do love the idea of, at some point, trying to develop some outside stuff. And I feel lucky to have worked on a few outside things, like outside shows here and there as supporting parts. And I'd love to do more of that if there's a way to work them in.
I hope you do. I hope you do. Because, you're just so funny and the nicest guy in comedy.
Oh, thanks, Austin. I appreciate it.
That's it for this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast. Send us your submission packet via email to feedback@reducedshakespeare.com. You can also post comments on our website podcast page, and you can post reviews on iTunes. You can interact with other fans at our website and our Reduced Shakespeare Company Facebook fan page. You can also become a subscriber to our YouTube channel or become a twit. Follow us on Twitter @Reduced. You can find easy links to all these social networks at our website, reducedshakespeare.com. Thanks, as always, to webmaster Matt Rippey, nice guy runner-up Matthew Croak, music by John Weber and Garage Band. Our random fan shout-out this week goes to Aaron Grand, one of our almost 4,400 Reduced Reader subscribers. No reason, it's just random. Special thanks to Sister Mary Martha. I am terribly sorry about the erect confusion. And thanks very much to you for listening. I'm Austin Titchener, 249/747 of the Reduced Shakespeare Company.
Yeah, that's funny. Pat would definitely give me rent for my money. TJ Jagodowski, Steve Carell. There's a few guys out there that probably are fighting for the title, but I'm honored to be mentioned in their company.
Boy, and I can only see the runoffs to the fight for the title of Nicest Man in Comedy. Yeah. The self-deprecating off.
You know? Yeah, exactly.
This podcast is a production of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, reducing expectations since 1981. Go to reducedshakespeare.com for performance dates, actor bios, email newsletters, and so much less.
So much less.